Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
And that's a lot of my work these days with parents. Is it good for the child, or is it your ego that's, you know, getting played here? I mean, it's understandable how we can make these mistakes, but we have to be very careful. These children really only get one childhood.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. Thanks for joining me today. I hope your week was fun and fabulous, and I hope you're ready for another jam-packed show today. You just heard a snippet from today's guest, a returning guest from last week, Sandra Riche, the clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression. And today, I'm going to replay an interview I did with her for one of my internet radio stations called Those Radio Kids, thoseradiokids.com. Head over there and check it out, because the topic is geared toward parenting, children, and psychological issues that clearly have an effect on health. Mental health and physical health go hand in hand, so I thought it important to touch on a subject that I haven't shared with you before, and that is parenting and parenting styles and how it all comes together to shape a child's future. So that's coming up. But before we get there, I want to bring to light, once again, an extremely important time during every hospital or rehab stay that is a major game changer. So, let's get started, because right now, it's time for the healthcare hazard of the week. Today, I want to tell a story that further exemplifies the need to have someone accompany you during any hospital stay. Physical therapy starts at 11 every weekday in the therapy room down the hall. A nurse's aide mentioned this as my mom checked into the rehabilitation center. Little did I know that the next 6 weeks would be the most stressful part of our journey. My mom was extremely weak and could not walk. Diagnosed with heart failure, hooked to a urine catheter, an oxygen tank, multiple IVs, a nasogastric feeding tube, and burdened with a stage 4 bed sore and an immobilized shoulder, she needed professional assistance for even the simplest of tasks. The only way to move her involved two people and a Hoyer lift, a hydraulic sling that carried her from bed to wheelchair. There were many tasks involved to prepare for her 11 o'clock therapy appointment. She had to eat breakfast, take medications, talk with the doctors during their rounds, have the wound team clean and bandage the bed sore, go to the bathroom, get a bed bath, change clothes, unhook oxygen and other IVs, get lifted from the bed to the wheelchair, rehook the oxygen and IVs, get weighed, and get wheeled to therapy. This was a lot to accomplish for a sick person who relied on others for help. During our first week, I counted on the staff to get Mom to therapy on time. I figured they knew the routine. I was wrong. Mom never made it to therapy that week. I realized soon that in order for her to get to therapy at 11, we had to start around 9. Each day after breakfast, medications, and doctor visits, I had to call for an aide as a reminder to give Mom a bath and change her clothes. Usually, an hour passed before someone helped. Then we endured the daily game of hide-and-seek with the Hoyer lift. It was never on the floor, so someone had to run around in an attempt to locate it. Once it was found, it took about 30 minutes to unravel all the IV tubes, position the sling, and hoist Mom from bed to chair. This was an exhausting ordeal for her and usually called for another 15 minutes of rest and oxygen. The therapist was supposed to arrive at the room 5 minutes to 11 to wheel Mom to therapy. And he usually arrived 20 minutes later. The frenzied preparation and Mom's fragile health caused her to arrive at the therapy in utter fatigue and late. Throughout all of this, other problems occurred, and we were sent back to the hospital where the physical therapy situation did not improve. Although the doctors performed miraculous feats, the therapy staff lagged behind. Each day in the hospital increased the potential for infection or other mismanaged event. During the first week, a physical therapist came by the room to get Mom out of bed to walk. He brought a big rolling walker with him. She walked a few steps and quickly ran out of breath. As he left the room, he said, "I'll be back tomorrow and we will do this again." Tomorrow came and went, and so did the rest of the week. No therapist, no walking, and no mention of therapy by any of the nurses. Once again, as an advocate, I questioned the nurses each day. Is someone going to walk with my mom today? They rolled their eyes in sympathy as I told the tale of the missing therapist. They had seen it many times with other patients, so occasionally a kind nurse stopped her daily routine to help Mom walk. Once her cardiac events were under control, the hospital discharged Mom back to the former rehabilitation center. Again, as an advocate, I fought against that. Going back there would be similar to be playing with a boomerang. I had to find a place where people took therapy seriously. And after scores of conversations and visits to facilities, I found one, and I made myself clear that I was going to watch the therapy situation like a hawk. And guess what? In 3 weeks, Mom was walking unattended with a walker, eating with utensils, climbing stairs, and playing Wii bowling games. If ever there was a need for an advocate, it was then. No one took her therapy seriously. No one followed up. There was no continuity, no procedures, and no rules. I asked, what good is tricky heart surgery if she cannot regain mobility? Why aren't stringent therapy procedures in place? How is she supposed to walk out of the hospital if she cannot walk? In return, I got shrugs and blank stares. My mom was in no shape physically, mentally, or emotionally to struggle with the tracking down of therapists or timely therapy. The staff was not attentive. Only an advocate with the willingness to follow through could navigate through the indifference. If you find yourself in the position of needing physical or occupational therapy while in the hospital, be mindful of the pitfalls. If you are an advocate, set the stage on the very first day that you expect therapy on a regular basis. If this does not happen, speak up and speak up again and again until you achieve results. Speak up and stay alive. 5 simple words that address a complex problem, and that is your safety when it comes to every healthcare or hospital encounter, or the safety of your family and friends. These words need to be in your mind and on your lips. And to help with that, I wrote the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Hospital Survival Guide, on the recommended reading list of the U.S. Army's Medical Department Office of Quality Management. And it should be on your reading list too. Get a copy for yourself. Give some away as important gifts. Bring the book to the hospital with you. Lay it on the tray table. Now, without saying a word, everyone knows that you are an e-patient, equipped, and eager to get out unharmed. You can purchase online for only $19.95 at the website speakupandstayalive.com or call me and order by phone 440-725-5462. That's speakupandstayalive.com or 440-725-5462. Speak Up and Stay Alive. The book tells you how, and I hope you do. It's summer, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to have some fun with your friends, your family, and there's only one place to do that, Pioneer Waterland and Dry Fun Park, 10661 Kyle Road in Chardon, Ohio, 440-285-0910, or visit the website pioneerwaterland.com. See you there.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome to Those Radio Kids. Those Radio Kids is an internet-based radio network founded to deliver insight and motivation to youth all over the world, with a special reach to those who are in the midst of or have experienced a health or medical problem, a disability, homelessness, or have survived a crisis or had a difficult or unusual childhood, with the goal of lending a hand. We also give voice to those who have a talent to share as a way to inspire other young people to find their voice and their passion. If you have something to say to help enrich the life of a child by sharing your life experience, your patient experience, thoughts, suggestions, or your talent, we want to hear from you. Visit thoseradiokids.com. And right now, I have a guest who has the background to inspire and help each and every one of us, regardless of our history or experience. She is Sandra Riche. Sandra is the clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression, the co-director of Empowered Women Workshops, co-director of Anxiety Videos, founder of Sandra Riche's Couples Retreat, as well as a best-selling author of a number one self-help book on relationships titled Once Upon a Time, How Cinderella Grew Up and Became a Happy, Empowered Woman, and a well-known expert on anxiety, relationships, family dynamics, and more. She holds a master's degree in counseling psychology from McGill University, and she received extensive training from the Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Clinic for Anxiety Disorders at the Montreal General Hospital. She is the host of a top weekly radio show, Straight Talk with Sandra Riche, on Internet's Voice America. And you can listen to Sandra's show every week on our very own internet radio network, SpeakUpTalkRadio.com. She was a previous guest on my patient safety radio program, Speak Up and Stay Alive, and it was during that conversation that I learned a bit about her childhood, and that caused me to want to know more and share her with you on Those Radio Kids. So I hope her message resonates and gives you the energy and impetus to understand your childhood experiences and create positive outcomes for yourself and others. So let's just get going. Welcome to the show, Sandra.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back, Pat. It's an honor.
Oh, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you as well. Well, Sandra, we're going to dig right in because that's how you and I roll. Let's begin by having you share your story as a child growing up.
Well, Pat, it's interesting. You know, my parents came from Europe, and it was post-World War II, and they had definitely gone through some difficult times. And when I was growing up in the family, I don't know why, but at 10 years old, I took out my first self-help book. I had the feeling that we could be healthier and that something wasn't exactly right. Nothing dramatic was going on, but something just didn't feel right to me. And it really started my journey right there with that first self-help book at 10 years old.
That's really crazy, because my next question was going to be, when did you realize that something just wasn't right? And so at age 10, you picked up a book. And that's pretty interesting that you went toward a book.
It is. But, you know, books have helped me enormously. And I really encourage people to understand that whatever difficulty you have in your life, someone else has had it. And so I started reading at 10 and I did not stop. And I think that really has helped me in my career, because I really think that relate to other people's pains and difficulties. So there was nothing, as I said, dramatic going on in the family, but I did have a sister who was having problems, and there was a lot of focus on her growing up. And I don't know, instinctively, that didn't seem to me to be the way to handle it. And I found my family was often coming to me for advice. And I was just a child. Now, at the time, that felt very flattering. Now, as a therapist, I can tell you that children are never supposed to be in that role. And unfortunately or fortunately, I took on that role for my family for, you know, my entire family life years, as the person who told that I have the insight and I can understand and I can help out. And again, any child hearing that will respond very positively and do more of it. But children are not actually supposed to caretake families. So it shaped my career. I turned my lemons into lemonade, but it was also very hard because I didn't learn that much about self-care. I learned about taking care of others.
So it wasn't that your parents were strict or controlling or overprotective?
Well, my parents were definitely strict, and I would say there was some control. That is another piece of the puzzle. There was a lot going on. I mean, again, you know, when you go through your own process in life, eventually you arrive at the fact that your parents did the best they could. So it's important that I feel like I need to say that. They, you know, again, they were immigrants. came to this country with like nothing. You know, many people have this story, and I don't think they had the skill set that, you know, that we have now for parenting. Nonetheless, their way of coping with that is they'd seen difficult things in their life is they were extremely overprotective, which is slash controlling, which did lead to my sister, my older sister, having an anxiety disorder. Now, I'm a specialist in anxiety. So what do we see all the time is that overprotectiveness leads to anxiety problems, which is somewhat counterintuitive because we think if we protect someone, that would be a good thing. Now, being the second child, and since they were so worried about my sister, I got a little bit neglected. But ironically, that protected me against the anxiety that my sister, to this day, unfortunately suffers.
Very interesting. I just spoke with somebody the other day whose parents immigrated from Italy, and she was the first child here, and they didn't know, the parents didn't know the language that well, and didn't think about sending her to college. And so she lost out on a lot of things because they were so overprotective. And they said, hey, you need to be a beautician because your aunt so-and-so in Italy was a beautician, and she loves it. So I would imagine, especially, in that situation with immigrant parents, that there is going to be some degree of overprotectiveness and rightly so.
Yes, I think that, you know, my mom in particular really didn't want her kids to suffer. And the strictness was like, I mean, it was great in terms of like, I can play a good Trivial Pursuit game because I was, you know, classical music and opera was allowed, but I didn't even realize there were other radio stations for many, many years. And I went into high school at 10. I skipped a grade, and my birthday's in September, and my parents thought it was a good idea to put me in high school at 10. No, that was not a good idea, I have to say in retrospect, because I was so overprotected that when I saw girls smoking, I actually thought they were hookers. I know that sounds funny now, but
yes.
At the time, it made me a target for quite a bit of bullying, which I endured, and I think that we have to be very careful with our kids to understand that. Like, I have a 10-year-old now. It's very difficult for me to imagine her in high school. Like, it's difficult for me to understand that situation. So, again, lots of education, maybe not as much emotional intelligence was I given. And IQ, intelligence, like, I know opera and I know classical music is great, but it's without the emotional intelligence, you're not going to get ahead far in life. I'm sure many people listening have met people who have great intellect but no social skills.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And as you were telling your story, I was thinking your parents expected you to behave in a mature way by kind of laying all of that decision making on you. But yet, I'm sure you were still treated as a kid on many instances. And so that's a really bizarre paradox as well.
Yes, you're so insightful. I always say that about you, Pat. And what you lead me to what happened, of course, is I went into high school in 10. I was bullied. It was very difficult. I eventually caught on to, like, how to survive this. And when I was 14 in grade 10, I said to my parents, well, my friends are going to bars. And they said, well, you're not going. And I said, well, you put me in high school at 10. I'm going. So then started a bit of a rebellious stage where, you know, I guess looking back, I must have been very frustrated with the situation. I think it was a great dinner party story to say my daughter is in high school at 10. But I don't think necessarily that was a smart parenting decision. Again, it sounds good, but is it good for the child? And that's a lot of my work these days with parents. Is it good for the child, or is it your ego that's, you know, getting played here? I mean, it's understandable how we can make these mistakes, but we have to be very careful because children really only get one childhood.
Mm-hmm. They do. And again, I keep going back to instances that cross my path. And just yesterday was a family that I call helicopter parenting. You've heard that before, where these people are just hovering over this child, making sure that she's playing golf. And I'm not sure that the child really wants to be doing that at, you know, 12 years old, and just lining up their after school activities and controlling all of that. So,
They were big on that too. And we know now, again, this is my area, that a lot of after school activities is actually a good predictor of anxiety. So, again, good intentions, perhaps, in parenting. We want to give our kids every school. And again, immigrant parents, in my case, they wanted us to not miss out on anything. Mm-hmm. But it causes a lot of stress for a child, and there was a lot of stress in the house, and that is where the self-help book came. There was a lot of stress in the house.
Wow, and at such a young age. Why don't you then give us some examples of parenting that can cause psychological damage to children in the long run? What have you seen?
Okay, well, you mentioned one that's one of our biggest ones, is helicopter parenting. So just to really clarify again is, and many of my clients go through this, is that, you know, there's a deep love between parent and child. And so our desire is to protect our children from everything. But the greatest gift you can give your child, and I really want to say this clearly, the greatest gift you can give your child is something called resilience. Not even happiness, because happiness comes and goes. So if I can give my kids resilience that they can survive good times and bad, I've really done a good job. Now, helicopter parenting does not teach a child resilience. So the child cannot survive difficult times. They do great in good times. So that's one of the number one mistakes we see. And it's very easy to see how it happens. I mean, I got a call from my daughter's camp yesterday that she's having a hard time. So the therapist in me knows the answer. But the mom in me is like, oh, my God, my daughter's having a hard time. I want to go rescue. But again, what is the lesson? The other one I mentioned also is that it's very common when there's more than one child in the family or someone in the family is not well. And I'm sure you see this in some of the discussions and the work you do. If someone's not well in the family or there's a problem, in my case, my sister had anxiety, then often the other child will be colluded, we call it in psychology, into a role of being either the caretaker or a very good child to not cause any problems because there's already problems. Or sometimes even an only child, if the parents have suffered trauma, there is secondary trauma, and the child will feel that they can never cause their parents a problem. And that is another very, very big problem because, again, children only have one childhood. They are not ever supposed to take care of their parents. Their parents are supposed to take care of them. And so when they get pulled into their parents' marriage or they get pulled into taking care of a sibling, we are definitely in a huge boundary violation. It starts the beginning of many boundary violations in that child's life because they won't understand boundaries.
There's just so much. It's hard to be a parent.
It's extraordinarily hard to be a parent because the loving part of you wants to always protect. And the being a parent is a job, like as if you put a construction hat on at the beginning of the day. You must always remember you're in a parental role. And so it is a job. So it's your decisions cannot be made the same way as they are in other relationships. Your decisions have to be made in terms of the fact that you are the person with the job hat on and the child is the child. And you guys are not on equal footing. And the idea that I'm my child's best friend, they have many friends in life, they need parents. Another very common error, by the way.
Absolutely. I have two daughters. Well, they're grown now, but I always took that stance. I mean, we always had a great time together, but it was pretty clear that we were not best friends, at least not at that point in time, that somebody has to be in charge. And there were many instances where that became very difficult for me as the parent and for them as a child. So I would imagine maybe that's when parents just give up. And with all the stress in life today, which is probably even more so than when my kids were growing up, I think it's just easier to say, okay, let's just do what you want.
Well, I really admire the way you handle things with your kids. It's exactly, according to the research, the correct way. And yes, parents do give up. It is a little bit more work to institute boundaries and consequences. But as we talked last time, when you put boundaries and consequences in and you run your household with clear mandates and lines of what can happen and what cannot happen, ironically, the household becomes much easier to run. It really is like anything else. Like we talked about last time, if the streets don't have stop signs, the world becomes chaotic. Same with parenting. The rules need to be clear. And then you're teaching your kids about respect and resilience. And again, if you don't show up to work in life, you don't get paid. Mm-hmm. We need these concepts and our kids need them. And they will thank you later, as I'm sure your kids have to you, Pat.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. It finally comes around, you know, once they're 30 years old and have their own kids. It's like, oh,
right.
I get it. I had to wait a long time for that, let me tell you.
You're adorable.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Now, I've done some research on this in the past, and it shows that children of authoritarian families are more prone to suffering from low self-esteem and low self-worth than children coming from more permissive parents. So, yeah, let's just talk about that.
Well, okay, so that's you always do your homework so well, Pat. I love that about you, and you're exactly right. So again, I'll bring, you know, my personal example is like I skipped a grade. My sister and I did very well in school. My parents were European. They wanted their kids to do well, and a typical response in my household was, "You got a 95 in school. Where are the 5 missing marks?"
Mm-hmm.
So I use this example often with clients because many of my clients live by that standard too, and for many years I continue. And sometimes on a bad day still do, is an extremely high standard. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people believe that's the road to success. It is not. The research shows that people with unrelenting standards, like you just said, are prone to depression, prone to anxiety, and definitely prone to poor self-esteem, because it feels like if 95 is not enough, metaphorically, you know, I mean, how many times in our life are we perfect?
Yeah.
Almost never. So it's on a bad day, I will say to myself, I'll hear my father's voice in my head and I'll say, I didn't get enough done. I probably got quite a bit done in that day, but it feels like it's not quite enough. And that is a critical voice. Self-esteem is a loving voice that says, you know what, you gave it your best efforts and good job. And we need to be our biggest advocates. And high standards is a critical voice. So people believe that that will make their kids get ahead. And the research shows that actually lowering standards helps people to get ahead. It sounds, again, counterintuitive. Like people, you tell this to clients and they say, well, I'll get lazy. Mm-hmm. No, you'll actually be relaxed. And when you're relaxed, you can achieve more.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But if you think about it, it makes sense because if they have such high standards, a child's going to learn that love and acceptance is dependent on their good behavior and come away with, if I behave, I will not be punished. And wow, imagine continuing that through your relationships in life. Imagine finding a spouse with that hanging over your head.
Well, you're right on the mark, because you will find a spouse who has that standards too, because we call into our life similar patterns in our spouses that we lived in our childhood. The wound gets repeated. And again, a very personal example, and I don't think my sister would mind me saying so, is that, again, we're both raised with the idea that getting great marks and succeeding is like, that's what it's all about. And my sister was very successful. She had a nice computer business. And the big companies came in and the computer business went sour, unfortunately. And I remember her saying to me, well, I'm a failure. I'm just like, I'm nothing now. And I thought, this is just so sad, you know, and I had, you know, saying to her, you're not defined. We can't be defined by our successes, because then we're only as good as our last success. It comes back to that we're worthy at all times. So success is beautiful. And if you have a successful business, then it pays the bills. Great. But your worth is not defined by your success. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you're right on the money there, Pat, because instead you grow up and you interpret your own worth as how you're doing. And yes, you will draw into your life a spouse who will do the exact same thing. And my sister did.
Wow.
Yeah. It resulted in a divorce. It was a very, very difficult situation. And the only reason that hasn't played out for me is I was the self-help girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly working on and reminding myself that when I hear that critical voice, that is an inaccurate voice and that is a bully voice. That is not a healthy voice. And that my parents, God bless them, but telling me 95 in school wasn't enough, that wasn't a good message. Mm. That was their own stuff and it wasn't healthy.
But how many people don't have the training that you do and then live with that and don't understand where it's coming from? It's a rough setup. And I'm thinking about these kids that are used to earning love because of these high standards and rules. I'm imagining that they would develop the belief then that people always have some kind of an egoistic agenda, that everything has a price tag.
Yes, they do. I meet with people like this all the time, and it's a really hard life. And as I said, you're only as good as your last success. So it's a little bit of a drug roller coaster, because then you have to keep performing and performing, and you get on that hamster wheel and there's no getting off. And of course, businesses do go bankrupt and things go wrong, and then you fall so hard. And I think it's very dangerous. So what I taught myself and what I encourage your listeners to teach themselves is that external things do not define who I am. So external things are external, and if I get a successful situation going on at work, well, great. As I said, the bank account will increase. This will pay bills, fabulous. But it does not in any way increase my worth. It increases my bank account. So therefore, if somebody tells me, wow, you did a great job today on the radio, instead of getting high on that, that sounds nice to me, but not to get high on it, because then next week if I do a radio show, and this actually recently happened, that someone said that wasn't your best show, that it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's just okay. It's okay when people say it's great. It's okay when people say it's not so great. It's okay either way.
I'm thinking two things. First, I'm thinking that, wow, but don't we always dwell on that tiny little bit of negativity? Why we hang on to that? You can get like 15 accolades during the day and one negative one, and there, that's what you come away with. That's what drives your
day. Well, that is a psychological phenomenon. It's the negativity bias, and humans are wired like that. It's normal. But again, if you can teach yourself that self-love voice, mm-hmm. then you'll hook onto it, but you'll also say, you know what, like on that radio interview that we were dissecting, and the feedback wasn't so good, you know, that I do the best I could that day? I did. Did it come out so great? That one wasn't so great. Can I live with myself? And, you know, that's okay, Sandra. You know, so you need that loving voice. So it wasn't through my training that I learned this. It was on my own. So I recommend that people, you can practice talking to yourself in a loving way, the way a loving parent, a loving, healthy parent would talk to a child. So a loving, healthy parent wouldn't say, you got a 95 in school, where are the missing 5 marks? A loving, healthy parent would say, you know, clearly you worked very hard. Did you do the best you can? You did. Great. Whether it's 95 or whether it's 75, good for you. If they're starting to do poorly in school, then, you know, to work with the child to see if they can improve the situation. But again, not to keep validating the external, mm-hmm. validate the internal. Did you do the best you could?
Right.
That's all we can do in life, right?
Absolutely. And as you were talking about the radio show, you know, you come away from it. I always try to come away from it thinking, not just a radio show, but anything. What can I learn from that? I mean, if I feel like I didn't live up to what I could normally do, you know, or it didn't turn out the way I wanted it, all right, well, what happened and what can I do to make it better next time instead of beating yourself up about it?
Well, you have such a healthy attitude, and I guess that's why you do so much advocating for other people, because you have such an insight on this. May I ask you how you learned this?
My dad had a horrible childhood with just his mom died when he was born and just a horrible father. And he brought himself up with just the power of audio tapes and subliminal messages that he would post everywhere. And
Wow. He
didn't teach this to me. I think I just quietly learned it from him. And yeah, it was just the way I watched him pull himself up and it just became who I am.
What an inspirational story, and it just brings up another point that I want to put out there, is that when you change yourself, like what your father did, you will change future generations. How powerful is that? And that's another thing I thought, I want to be the best me before I have a child. And I think that what your father did helped you to not have to go through some of the hardships he did. And, you know, really, really a great story about your dad, and really you are the evidence of that work. The work we don't do, our kids will have to do. So it's important for us to do it.
That takes me to my next thought, is that by the time you see people, they have endured a lifetime of this pain and suffering. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there was some way to teach and educate and empower parents before they were parents? Because you just see all kinds of parenting styles out there. And, you know, if you have half a sense, you can watch and look and see how that child is going to turn out in the future. I wish there was a way we can grab these people ahead of time and say, hey, before you procreate, let's figure this thing out.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I happen to be the mother of adopted kids. And when you adopt kids, you have to take a lot of courses. And every step during those courses, I thought, why are these not courses for everybody? We know so much in science now we know quite a bit about parenting, and we know about attachment. And yet, it's not that available to people. I do want to mention, you know, really not as a sales tactic, but just to let people know that there are DVDs out. We have a DVD on parenting. People can find it on anxiety-videos.com, which is a website. And if not ours, there's other people, wonderful psychologists who write books on the topic. The information is out there. It's just unfortunate it's not in the schools. But it's definitely worth learning, because we don't get a manual of parenting. And the science actually is there. Mm-hmm. Attachment, boundaries, all those things, we have the science, and we can be better parents if we know how.
I sat on the bed of my daughter when she was a teenager once, and she was having a particularly hard time, and so was I with her. And I said those very words to her. I said, you know, Chris, you did not come with a manual, and I am just trying to do the best I can. And just those words, I think, really brought us together, where she realized I was a person trying the best I could, and we then tried to work through that situation together.
What a beautiful moment you had there. I mean, that's just very touching, very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. It's just, it's another thing that you did, a strategy that's very important, is you were really honest with your daughter. It's like, I don't know. Let's just work this out and do the best we can. And I think I don't know are very powerful words in English altogether. You know, no matter what field or what we're doing, is we don't always have the answer. And I think that made it so safe for your daughter. Really, really, really well handled, I must say.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I just really agree with what you just said. We find it difficult to say, I don't know. People just make things up or just come up with some kind of nonsensical thing just to avoid admitting that we just don't know. And how refreshing that is for someone to hear, I don't know, and then work through it together.
Yeah, it's really humbling. We're taught early in life that to say, I don't know, is to appear weak. And actually, the strongest people in the world are really good at saying things like, I don't know, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Those words are not difficult when you have good, what we call ego strength. They're not difficult. And we need to teach people that it's not shameful to be wrong. It's not shameful to not know. It's actually very human, and we connect very well with other people's vulnerabilities. We don't really connect with people who seem to know everything. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants that, and I've always been very open with my clients, and I think it created a lot of safety in the room because nobody wants to feel they're with someone who, you know, is the end-all, be-all and has all the answers and hasn't suffered. And I think when you were with your daughter, when you said that, you showed your own vulnerability, mm-hmm. and that really gave her vitamins for her soul.
Oh, I like that.
And that's what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Vitamins for her soul. You are just awesome and amazing. We could talk for days and it's just,
yeah, we sure could.
There's just so much important information here. Well, talking about children, talking about parents and parenting, as we begin to wrap up, do you have any final words of advice for either party or both? Or how do you want to wrap us up here?
We talked about me coming on and talk about my childhood. And I think the lessons, the important lessons to consider is that we have to be careful of not projecting our own stuff onto our kids. And it's very normal and understandable that we do this because we want the best for our kids. So be careful about putting too much pressure. Be careful of not putting any pressure at all either. So we have to find that sweet spot, and it's not always that easy. And the way to not get into trouble is to have clear boundaries and consequences. So you definitely want your kids to give their best shot at things. You don't want to create an environment that they're so anxious in. And you definitely are the boss, meaning your kids need to respect you, not only love you, respect you. And it's a two-way street because there's many boundary violations against kids, unfortunately. People in difficult marriages, another tip, often hide behind their kids, bringing their children into their bedroom. It's a very, very, and I'm not talking in any sexual way,
no.
It's a very big problem. Tell the truth about your own marriage. If you're having difficulty in your marriage, that's okay. Get help. There's a lot of options out there, but don't hide behind your kids because your kids will feel it, and kids are very smart. Mm-hmm. And they will protect the family. That's what children do. And that's a very heavy burden. As far as the control, we heard a little bit about the control that I went through. It will lead to kids not being ready to survive life because life is filled with things that are out of control. Let's get comfortable with discomfort. So those are some of my key tips that come up every day, and many parents struggle with it, and it's difficult. But it is what it is. So I did not drive to the camp yesterday and rescue my daughter. I wanted to. I spoke to her, and she sounded very, like she was in discomfort. And I did, you know, the mother and me wanted to just take her out of discomfort. I did not. And I think that hopefully she's going to learn to deal with some discomfort, which is not fun, but it's a part of life.
Your children are fortunate to have someone who is so wise and able to see this whole picture. Well, now
you're
think
very kind.
Well, I'm serious. It's a pleasure to learn from you, and I know there's so much more. Where can then folks? I think you mentioned before, but where can folks go to learn more about you, contact you, maybe even work with you?
There's many ways. You can go on the website helpforanxietydepression.com. Again, that's helpforanxietydepression.com. They can call us at 514 877-457-4530. The videos on parenting or anxiety are at anxiety-videos.com. And you can follow me on Facebook, either Sandra Reish or Straight Talk with Sandra Reish. And that's the radio show as well. We have a website there too, Straight Talk Sandra Reish, R-E-I-C-H.com. And I do want to mention that the amazing Pat, who I'm speaking to, is going to be on Straight Talk on September 22nd. So we're really excited to turn the tables and interview you, Pat.
Oh my gosh, we love each other, don't we?
We really do. We're fans.
We are fans of each other. I'm a great fan. All right, folks, we're going to send everyone to helpforanxietydepression.com, your radio show, Straight Talk, SandraReish.com. She can be heard on our Speak Up Talk radio network. Just so many ways to get in touch with her, and I really encourage folks to do so and hit your website and find out all the good things that you have to offer. Sandra, the only way I can end this is say I just love you.
You know what, Pat? I love you, and I have great admiration for you. So thank you so much for bringing me into your world. It's been just a complete pleasure.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
I'm Jerry the Germ, here to spread healthcare and hospital safety tips all over the airwaves. Here's our expert, Pat Rulo.
Hey, Jerry, do you hide in the patient zone? I'm talking about the 2 feet surrounding the patient's bed in a hospital room. Objects used most often and are closest to the bed have the highest levels of bacteria. Germs can survive on surfaces for extended periods. Frequently touched surfaces or disease transfer points include bed rails, call buttons, TV remotes, bed trays, telephones, door handles, light switches, IV poles, sinks, toilets, grab bars, and tabletops. These surfaces can be contaminated with an antibiotic resistant staph bacteria called MRSA and are prime ways you, the hospital, and your visitors can spread bacteria. Before you settle in, clean your hospital room with hospital bleach wipes, a simple way to break the infection cycle. Look out, Jerry. I'm coming after you.
Stay safe. Listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Tune in every Saturday morning. For more information, go to speakupandstayalive.com.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy to spend this hour with you to help you survive any and every healthcare or hospital encounter. By now, you've probably heard me talk about how I fear the wheelchairs that grace the front doors of almost every hospital. Patients and visitors get out of their cars and hop into a wheelchair, and I always wonder, what have they touched? When was the last time those jeans were washed? Then they wheel around the hospital, use the bathroom, sit in waiting rooms, visit patients, all the while picking up additional and deadly hospital bacteria like MRSA, C. diff, a bit of E. coli, and perhaps some candida yeast. And at the end of the day, they're back in their car, leaving the contaminated wheelchair at the front door of the hospital, ready for the next person to climb aboard. This makes the wheelchair a high-touch, highly contaminated vehicle capable of spreading infections all over the place. So the wheelchair is now this show's representation of all hospital dangers, kind of like our mascot. So here we go.
Fear the wheelchair.
Listen as Joe reads some true or false statements. Then, even though I can't hear you, shout out your answers along with Bob. Is the answer right or wrong? Ready, Joe?
Sure am. Right or wrong, the patient should never introduce their advocate to their doctor. It is an undercover and secret job.
What do you think, Bobby?
So funny. That's wrong.
Of course that's wrong. Always introduce your advocate and make it clear that you give permission for your advocate to ask questions and receive answers as if coming from you, the patient.
Right or wrong, most hospital germs can be found in the patient zone.
What is it, Bob?
Wrong.
Oh, Bob, that's usually right. Remember the Jerry the Germ ad? The patient zone is the 2 or 3 feet immediately surrounding the patient's bed and includes all frequently touched items. It's a good idea to clean this area several times a day with a bleach wipe, Bob.
Right or wrong, we have more than 5 senses.
What's your answer, Bob?
I won't know what the sixth is, but I'll say wrong.
Nope. I think that's right, Bob, that we also have a sixth sense, and that is our gut feeling, especially during any healthcare situation. If something just doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. Pay attention to that instinct and speak up.
Right or wrong, when your patient or loved one leaves the room for testing, it's a good time to grab a snack.
What do you think, Bob?
Wrong.
Yes, that is wrong. Stay with your patient during all trips out of the room, including gurney or wheelchair visits to radiology, testing, or procedures. These are called handoff times, and that's when mistakes can happen.
Right or wrong, C. diff got us in because it's easy to see how difficult it is to get rid of.
Ooh, cute. What do you think, Bob?
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wrong.
Yes, it is wrong, but it is a cool way to remember its name. C. diff stands for Clostridium difficile, and it's a major bacteria found in healthcare settings. Remember, hand sanitizers do not get rid of that nasty bug. Wash your hands often with warm, soapy water and use the hospital-grade bleach wipes found in your hospital room to disinfect all surfaces.
Right or wrong, we should never concern ourselves with patient safety if we don't know about something that it doesn't exist.
What do you think, Bobby?
That's wrong.
Yes. And as I've heard it said before, denial ain't just a river in Egypt. Remember, the more you know, the safer you'll be. And you heard it here on Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Well, thank you guys for playing my super fun game.
Fear the wheelchair.
Yay, you are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am Pat Rulo, where the boys and I are keeping you safe during any healthcare and hospital encounter. Stay in your seat.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Her presentation formats vary from 15-minute small talks to 30-minute lunch and learns to one-hour events called The Scoop to full days. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am Pat Rulo, your hostess and author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available at all of our live speaking events or at our website, speakupandstayalive.com. That's where you can also locate radio show times, dates, and station information. That's speakupandstayalive.com. And if you want to purchase the book but do not have internet access, it's okay to call me. Lots of folks order the book by phone, so give me a call, 440-725-5462. Once again, too much to talk about and too little time. But if you want more, there are three things you can do to take action. Number one, visit the website, speakupandstayalive.com, speakupandstayalive.com, and purchase a copy of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. It's only $19.95 plus a few dollars for shipping, and it can seriously save your life. Because after reading it, you'll know all about the secret and seldom discussed hospital hazards. Number two, you can visit the website, speakupandstayalive.com, and listen to previous shows. There is a special page called Radio Archives, where you can access many of our previous programs and listen to them again and again. And number three, you can invite me to speak live and in person. If you are a member of a group of any kind, a church, business, association, or even a hospital, I have lots to say to help you survive, and I guarantee your crowd will thank you. So there you have it. Three ways to make today last longer. Can't beat that. And then be sure to come back next week when I'll have more to share with you. Same time, same place, but you know me, never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week, free from helicopter parents and contaminated wheelchairs. I am Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hello? My name is Joe. Is this Pat Rulo, the host of Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio?
Why, yes, it is.
Who are you?
Who am I? I am you. I am every person who has ever been in a hospital or doctor's office and has received less than acceptable treatment.
Who are you?
I am you, the person who got an infection during a simple outpatient procedure.
Wait, who are you?
I am you, the patient whose questions are ignored, who struggles to speak to the doctor as he or she has one foot out the door. I am the missed heart attack, the hospital-acquired infection, the wrong diagnosis, the unanswered call button.
Oh, so you're all about me. Do you have a quick tip to help me stay safe?
Take care of yourself by paying attention to infection opportunities. Where are they lurking? Waiting room magazines, TV remotes, elevator buttons, doorknobs, restrooms. The opportunity to acquire an infection in the hospital is huge. Germs and bacteria are everywhere. They float in the air, live on your clothes and hands, and reside on everything in sight. The consequences of a hospital-acquired infection are grave, yet prevention is simple. Be a germaphobe, be a clean freak. And Joe, wash your hands often and remind others to wash theirs before touching you.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.